Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you have just joined us, welcome to Radio Islam International and welcome to the program Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zeenat. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Well, joining me this afternoon for our monthly program is the Indonesia Clinics Community-Based Rehabilitation Services team. And with me in the studio today, alhamdulillah, is our occupational therapist, that is Nazreen Hassan. We also have another occupational therapist, Melanie Muller, and our audiologist and speech therapist, Raisa Muller. So, alhamdulillah, we're going to be talking about our discussion really is all about or focusing on learning disabilities and the role of the occupational therapist and the audiologist and the speech therapist. So we're going to see how all that, you know, how they actually can help children suffering from learning disabilities or that has learning disabilities, inshallah. Now, our lines will be open throughout the program. If our listeners are interested to ask any questions, the number to dial is 011-854-1548. Firstly, I'd like to say assalamu alaikum and this good afternoon to our guests this afternoon. It's wonderful to have you with us in the studio.
Thank you so much for having us.
Okay, Nazreen wasn't with us for a while now, but shukar alhamdulillah, it's wonderful to have us have her with us. And of course, our physiotherapist, Brother Muhammad Abu Bakr, is not with us anymore. He won't be with us now. So we're hoping to get another one soon, inshallah.
Amen.
Okay, so firstly, now, you know, as a parent, it can be hard to understand your child's learning disability or even know how to respond to it in order to help them. Now, your priority should be to make sure that your child is receiving the additional support that they need in the right educational environment. So inshallah, today on Family Health Matters, we are focusing on doing just that. We have, you know, our experts with us, inshallah. So once again, a reminder to our listeners that if you want any of your questions answered, please do call in. You know, they would be able to help you. They would be able to answer most of your questions. And they also would be able to support you, you know. So please do call in. The number to dial, 011-854-1548. And, of course, the WhatsApp the SMS number is 082-8492-786. So, yeah, good. Assalamu alaikum. Really, it's so nice to have you with us again today. So, let's start off with our occupational therapist. We'll talk to Melanie first. Melanie, learning disability is something that we hear a lot these days. It's a very common term.
Yes,
you know, you go to schools these days and you really hear. Not only at school, even, you know, if you're just sitting in a gathering or talking or parents talking, you always hear about children having learning difficulties. So what exactly is a learning disability?
Okay. So the term learning disability describes a number of conditions. So it's not just one thing. It can be, there's a whole number of things that affect the children's ability to receive, process, analyze, or store information. And these problems, because they can't process or analyze, they're struggling with this, that makes it difficult for the child to learn as quickly as someone who isn't affected by a learning disability. And it's important to know that a learning disability doesn't have anything to do with a person's intelligence. It can affect people with average or even above average intelligence.
So basically, it's just something that's, you know, that kind of retards their learning process.
It's just something that's affecting their ability to learn.
Okay. So what, you know, I think if you, it's so difficult these days to actually pinpoint a person, or you look at a person and you say, this person has a learning difficulty. So what are we looking at? What are some of the signs or that would indicate that this child has a learning disability?
Okay. So unfortunately, you can't tell by looking at a person that they have a learning disability, which can make it very difficult to diagnose. Learning disabilities usually first show up when a child has difficulty speaking, reading, writing, figuring out a math problem, communicating, or paying attention in class. Some learning disabilities are discovered when a parent or a teacher notices that the child can't follow directions for a game or is struggling to work or struggling to do work that he or she should be able to do quite easily, and there often appears to be a gap between the child's potential and their actual achievements. And because of this, learning disabilities are often referred to as hidden disabilities, because the person looks normal, but yet they are unable to do things that are expected of from someone of their age. So, but some things that you can look out for, it is a lot of the children with learning disabilities struggle with handwriting, and they struggle to copy from the board. They often appear quite clumsy, but like I said, it's something that's quite difficult to see, that it can be so varied. There's so many signs that it's actually very difficult to say.
And I think many a times parents can't pick it up very quickly.
Yes.
It's more like when your child goes to school and, you know, they start schooling, and that's when most of the problems will be picked up at school.
Yes.
So that's one of the reasons I think parents should always be in contact with their teachers.
Yes, because very important.
And I think also very important is, you know, if a teacher brings that up, you should take it very seriously.
Yes.
And, you know, not leave it, because there's so much that can be done in those early years that can help the child manage so well later on, inshallah.
But I think even when a parent is feeling that something is wrong, or they are feeling uncomfortable, it's important not to ignore that feeling and to have the child check up just to be safe.
Mm-hmm. They always say a mum's instinct is always right. So, yeah. Anyway, what role now does an occupational therapy or occupational therapist play in, learning disabilities?
So whether a child has been diagnosed with a learning disability or is just experiencing difficulty in school, an occupational therapist can be a valuable support. Because a learning disability cannot be cured, it's important to find ways in which the problem can be managed, and this is where occupational therapy comes in. So it's important to find the appropriate support and intervention to try and manage the condition. Occupational therapy's main focus will be to help the child gain independence and develop new school skills, to enable participation in daily activities such as getting dressed, play, and then obviously learn and go to school and cope in the classroom. So when a child has been diagnosed with a learning disability, the therapist will work closely with the child and his or her family and the teacher to try and optimize their engagement at school and in their home environment. As occupational therapists, we look at, there's five components that we look at when it comes to assessing and treating a child with a learning disability. We look at gross motor skills, fine motor skills, the sensory system, visual perceptual skills, and cognitive skills. And not all these components are always affected in a child that presents with a learning disability. It might be that only one or two of these components are affected, but they all feed into each other, so we always just look at all five of them. And in doing this, we are working on the underlying problems that may be contributing to or causing academic difficulties for the child. So, and children with learning disabilities may also find it difficult to organize themselves or sequence the actions that are needed to complete their daily activities or tasks that are expected of them at school. An occupational therapist can have to establish a structured routine and break down information into steps that the child will be able to follow. I just want to add, it's important to know that an occupational therapist cannot diagnose a learning disability. Should we suspect a learning disability, we will refer to a child psychiatrist, a neurologist, or an educational psychologist for the appropriate test to be done and the diagnosis to be made. And this is important for parents to know as well, that the occupational therapist will help manage the condition, but we don't diagnose learning disability.
So basically, they normally, a doctor or a physician for that matter, or a teacher would probably refer you to a doctor first, and then from there it'll go, and they will probably send you to the occupational therapist. But it's also possible that if you suspect anything as a parent, that you come first to the occupational therapist.
Yes, it is, definitely.
So then you would obviously just do the necessary then.
Yes, so we will, we have a few children that come that just have academic difficulties and they just need some adaptations in the classroom or so. But if we suspect a learning disability, we will refer, because we can't diagnose that.
Mm.
So, but definitely you can come to the occupational therapist first.
So what can you expect if you take your child for occupational therapy then?
So firstly, the occupational therapist will have a conversation with you to gain information about your child's medical, personal, and their educational history. A letter, a report, or any documents from your child's teacher, the doctor, the psychologist, or any other professional that has seen the child will be very useful for us during this part of the process, because for us, it's important to get to know you and your child and to build a good and trusting relationship. The occupational therapist will then do a few tests on your child to see what the child's abilities are. These tests include just very simple things like copying and identifying different shapes and pictures, jumping, throwing a ball. So this is where we're looking at those five components that I've mentioned.
So you can actually pick up quite a bit by them just doing these simple little exercises that you want them
to do. We do have a few standardized tests that we also do. And then the goal of these tests will be to assess, like I've said, the five components, and through this we'll determine the child's strengths and weaknesses, and it will allow for us to start building a relationship with the child, because for the child they're just playing and drawing. And we will then analyze our assessment results, and we'll have a conversation with the parents. So we sit down with the parents and we just discuss our findings, and then we decide together with the parents exactly what treatment should be focused on, and we design an individual treatment program to suit the specific needs of each individual child. And then also we decide how regularly therapy will have to take place, and we use play and activities to address the underlying issues that cause your child to struggle with the things that they are struggling with.
Okay, it's very interesting though, but Nazreen, as an occupational therapist yourself, what would you say is the basis of a development, of a child?
Okay, so the basis of development and learning is the integration of the sensory systems that each person has. So if we can imagine the development of a child and the learning of a child as a pyramid, and the base of the pyramid, which is the widest part of the pyramid, would be the integration of the traditional and special senses. And if we look at the pyramid as well, if we look at the apex of the pyramid, this would be the cognitive and academic skills which they would achieve when they're going to school. So going back to the basis of development, or the base of the pyramid, I will discuss the traditional and special senses in there. So there are five traditional senses, which are seeing, touch, hearing, smell, and taste. Mm-hmm. And then there are three other senses which OTs are very interested in, and that is tactile, which is touch, vestibular, which is related to gravity and movement, and proprioceptive, which is related to the muscles and the joints and tells you about your position in space. If these senses are not well integrated, if they don't work well together, the foundation for learning will have cracks in it. So the base of the pyramid is going to have cracks in it, and there will be deficits in areas of development in the pyramid that are built on the sensory base, and this may then result in learning difficulties.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's quite a mouthful for us. I don't really quite understand what that, and I'm sure you're going to unpack that a little more as we go along, during the program. I mean, all these things seems like, I don't understand what you're saying there, but hopefully, as we go along, we will understand.
Definitely.
We're going to take a short break now, and when we return, inshallah, we will continue with this program. But a reminder to our listeners, if you have any questions or you have any concerns, please do feel free to contact us. The number today is 011-854-1548, and you can also SMS or WhatsApp us on the number 082-8492-786. We have the occupational therapist with us, two of them in fact, and we have the speech and audiologist with us as well. So please feel free to contact us. It would be nice, for you to talk to them, and I'm sure they'll be able to give you a lot of information that you need. So stay tuned. We'll be back in a few moments. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to Family Health Matters. I'm your sister Zeenat, and my guests are from the Lineja Clinic Community Based Rehabilitation Services team. We have our occupational therapist, Melanie Miller, Nazreen Hassan, and we also have our audiologist and speech therapist, Sister Isa Bullah, with us, who will come in a little later in the program as well. Now, we're talking about the basis of development of a child, and I think Nazreen mentioned something about the five traditional senses, that was the seeing, touch, hearing, smell, and taste. And of course, she also mentioned the special senses, which is the tactile, which is touch, vestibular, which is gravity and movement, and I hope I pronounced this correctly, but it's called proprioceptive. That's it. Muscles and joints. Okay, yes. So let's talk a little more about this. Now, you mentioned integration of the senses.
Yes.
Could you please tell us a bit more about this? But I think just before we do that, could we just take our question that's come in? Give me a minute. I'll get it for you in a minute again. She says, Assalamu alaikum, Jazakallahu khair for this program. My son is 4 years old and sometimes I feel he has a concentration problem. So how can I know if he has the needed concentration for his age?
Okay, so when we're looking at concentration, we're going to be looking at two different components of concentration. You get something called active concentration and passive concentration. So active concentration would be something that you would be using. Concentration you'd be using when you're doing a new activity that you haven't done before and you have to actively concentrate. But passive concentration is something that you would be using for a familiar activity or an activity that's not new. There's lots of factors that also go into concentration. So if you're worried about your child not being able to concentrate, you know, what does that picture look like? Is the child daydreaming and looking away, or is the child sort of coming across as, you know, hyperactive and jumping around? What is it that they are doing? And then there's lots of factors that could be contributing to that. So I know a lot of people tend to jump to the ADHD conclusion very quickly, but there's lots of other things that can impact on a child's attention and concentration as well. Like, for example, do they have low tone? Have they just had a sugary meal? Are one of those sensory systems that we were speaking about, the vestibular and proprioceptive sensory systems, are they not functioning as well as they should be functioning? So I wouldn't want to say, you know what, your child has to be concentrating exactly for this amount of time. I'd rather like to get a picture of it. If you maybe want to contact us and come in, we can have a look at what the child is displaying in terms of symptoms, and we can advise you as such. Because your child who may not be able to concentrate for the required amount of time while they're sitting may be able to then concentrate for the required amount of time if we put them onto like a Pilates ball, or if we have them in standing doing an activity. So I'd rather that if you do come in and we discuss it with you.
Okay. Yeah. And in any case, she sent in, she says he daydreams and looks away.
Okay.
And of course, not jumping though.
Okay, so he's daydreaming and looking away. So we need to then determine, you know, what is he internally distracted? Is he externally distracted and he can't refocus his attention? Is there something we can do and adapt, like Melanie spoke about adaptations in the classroom, to then make him concentrate? So I don't want to say hard and fast, you know, your child has to concentrate for 20 minutes and that's what they have to concentrate for actively or passively or whatever it is. I'd rather you come in and we look at what the actual problem is that's contributing to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I hope that answers the question for you, but like we said, we will be sharing the contact details a little later. So, and it's here in Lanesha, so you know you're free to come in at any time.
Yeah.
In any case, let's continue then with regards to the integration of the senses. Could you tell us a little more about it?
Okay, so we spoke about the different senses, and just to go back to Melanie's five categories and components, the two that I will be discussing are the sensory systems and also gross motor, and how gross motor activities, which is large movements of the bodies, and how those two impact on each other and how they contribute to each other. But just to go back, we looked at the base of the pyramid, and that's the building blocks of the pyramid, which is your sensory systems. And what we want to achieve, the apex of the pyramid at the end of the day, is the fact that your child can learn academically. That's what we want to achieve. If we're going to look at those senses, those five traditional senses, which we spoke about, the touch, seeing, the taste, let me just get back to my notes here, about the five traditional senses, seeing, touch, hearing, smell, and taste. And we look at the three senses that the OTs are actually interested in, which is the tactile, the vestibular, and proprioceptive. We are very interested in those being very well integrated, especially those three, because those are the ones that develop first. The proprioceptive, vestibular, and tactile, they develop first neurologically. And they have to work very well together with themselves and with the other traditional senses so that the child can learn appropriately and so that the child can organize themselves and all their sensations if they are to learn and behave in a productive manner. And just to add a little spanner in the works there, movement after movement and exercise after exercise is how you integrate those senses. So gross motor exercise and gross motor movements and activities contribute greatly to integrating those senses.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, you spoke about those those senses that are unfamiliar to most of us, the ones I cannot even pronounce correctly, the vestibular and the proprioceptive centers. So, you know, maybe you can just elaborate a little on that, please.
Okay, so the two that I'm going to talk about are the vestibular sense. and the proprioceptive sense, right? So the vestibular sense, basically, if you just want to summarize it, that's involved in movement, okay? And it's involved in balance and movement, and it's centered in the inner ear. So it tells us a lot about position of our heads and bodies in space as well. Okay, so a child with a well-developed vestibular sense feels confident and safe during their movement activities, even if his feet are off the ground. He's also able to start and stop movement activities calmly and with control. Okay, so he doesn't look like he's clumsy if it's functioning correctly. And another thing also to note about the vestibular sense is that you can get children who look like they are under-responsive or over-responsive in terms of vestibular sense. So you may get a child who looks like they're not being activated enough, or a child that looks like they're too activated and moving around too much with regard to this movement sense. And then also another thing to look at is that if a child has a problem, they may feel insecure and unbalanced, okay, and he may move in an uncoordinated or clumsy manner. They may bump into things. They may fall. It's also the child, if you look at them, they're slouching at the desk, or they're constantly being directed to sort of like sit up straight, stand up straight, or they're leaning on the wall and they're being told not to lean against the wall. They look a little bit like your sloppy children.
Mm.
I think what's also important to notice is that, you know, with our day and age now, when we watch TV and we play video games a lot, the children are very sedentary. They sit a lot.
Yeah.
And that doesn't allow for stimulation of that vestibular system, which I've told you comes from gross motor activity. You need to be moving around to be able to get that vestibular system going and to integrate that vestibular system, because it's exercise after exercise and movement after movement that allows you to actually integrate that system. And then also just to notice that a child who has a well-developed vestibular system, all the sensory information from the senses are organized correctly, and the appropriate and the correct information from the senses are coming through, and the correct responses then occurs as well. So, for example, a child's eyes tell them where they are in the room, and then the ears hear the background noise and they filter it out as necessary, and the vestibular system would then detect if the body is balanced. And the child then, in the classroom situation, is able to devote more energy into the higher learning processes. So the demands that are made on them, their academic demands, their mathematical demands, English demands, life skills demands. So they can then dedicate their energy to that sort of learning, because all of the other normal functions of the body become automatic when those systems, sensory systems, are integrated.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you mentioned a few of these things, like just being floppy children, lying, being so floppy, and you know, as parents, I think we shouldn't take all this very lightly. You should actually go and have it investigated, and not just think, oh, sit up straight, that's all we'll do. If we see a children sitting floppily, you know, floppling around, or sitting in front of the TV, and we assume that's the reason why they do it, but really there may be underlying problems.
There may be underlying problems, and a thing to note as well is that we talk about children with low tone, okay, where the muscles are not contracting as they should be contracting. And that actually is a vestibular dysfunction. That's why I've chosen to speak about the vestibular system today. So if you have a vestibular dysfunction, it is likely that you're going to have low tone as well. And so how do you normalize that tone, that low tone that you have? You affect the vestibular system through movement, and you do movement activities.
Okay. And then tell us more about the proprioceptive system.
Okay, so this system, the sensory organs are found in the joints and the muscles. Again, it tells us about where we are in space and our joint position in space. So when children move and they play, their muscles are going to be stretching and contracting. And proprioception refers to the way joints and muscles send messages to the brain to help coordinate the movement and let us know where we are in space. So if you're looking at the child, for example, a functioning proprioceptive system allows a child to write with a pencil without pushing so hard that he breaks the tip or he goes through the page. He's able to take a drink adequately from a polystyrene cup, for example, without crushing the cup, because he knows how hard he's supposed to be pressing. A functioning proprioceptive system also allows children to move, play, explore their environment in a smoothly coordinated and efficient way, not too gently and not too rough. So if we look at a child who has poor proprioceptive abilities, they often also appear clumsy or uncoordinated. So the two sort of link, they give you a similar picture. And, you know, they can come across as, some of the children can come across as being rough. They're pushing other children as well. They write and color in with heavy pressure and a heavy hand. They play aggressively. And some of them come, they look as if they're falling out of their chair several times a day. Sometimes they color very light, where you can hardly see it. It's barely visible. And they look weak and clumsy. So you get two very different pictures, but those are still symptoms of, you know, a dysfunction possibly in the proprioceptive system.
Mm-hmm. So basically, if these are in order, these two senses are in order, mm-hmm. then everything would automatically work out. It'll be, you know, you would be doing things automatically.
We like to think so, yes. So it's, you know, I think if you go outside and you play with your children in the park, all the playground equipment there is going to basically address all your sensory system needs. And if you do that on a regular basis, consistently, you... I'm going to go out on a limb here and say you're going to have, you know, well-integrated sensory systems.
Okay, we're going back to Melanie's now. Now, out of the five components that we've spoken about, can you perhaps just explain the other three? You know, I don't know if they are the more simpler ones, eh? Shall we call them, the more common ones, the ones that we're more aware of.
Yes, okay. Yes, they definitely are the ones that we speak about more often.
Mm-hmm.
So the ones that I will be discussing are visual perception, fine motor skills, and cognitive skills. So those are the three that's
left. That is something that we're familiar with.
A little bit more familiar. Yes.
You know, us, the ordinary people, would be more familiar with that, with these terms, rather.
So the first one that I'll discuss is visual perception. This is the brain's ability to make sense of what the eye sees. So it's not the same as vision, which is how well you can see. There's a difference. It's interpreting what you are seeing. So someone with visual perceptual problems may appear clumsy, or they might struggle with reading or write their letters the wrong way around, or struggle to copy from the board. And there are many different components to visual perception, but I'll just mention the basic ones quickly. So one of them that we look at is visual spatial relationships, and this is knowing where your body is in relation to your environment, as well as where all the objects in the environment are in relation to one another. So knowing that you are standing behind something and how to walk around something. And then the second one is figure ground. This is the ability to locate something in a very busy environment. And form constancy, this is the ability to know that a shape is the same, even if it has been made smaller, larger, or it's been turned around. And then we have visual closure, which is the ability to recognize a shape or a picture even when it's incomplete. So we treat visual perception through practicing the specific things that the children struggle with, and this is also something that parents can do at home. So, for example, with figure ground, where a child has difficulty spotting something in a busy environment, just an example of something that we'll do is beading. So threading, making a necklace or something, and then the child has to find specific beads in between a whole bunch of other beads. So there, they're practicing to find something in a very, very busy environment. Also, completing a picture that's incomplete, so they have to draw the rest of the picture, or playing games where they have to recognize a shape that's made bigger or smaller or rotated around, and still recognizing that this is still a triangle, even if it's just a little bit bigger or smaller. Then the second one is fine motor skills. This is small movements that use the small muscles of the fingers and the hands. So just some examples of activities where you need fine motor skills are threading small beads onto a string, holding a pencil and writing with it, cutting. There's a whole bunch of things that I'm sure that you can also think of. And we treat fine motor skills mostly through strengthening and exercising the small muscles in the fingers and almost teaching the child to coordinate those small muscles. We do this through a lot of the time with Play-Doh. That's a very, very good thing to get for your child if they're still small. Playing with clothing pegs. So we're just very creative, and we design all kinds of games where the children has to open and close the clothing pegs as part of a game. Another thing that you can do at home is to post bottle caps into small holes, and then cutting out pictures, and we're making it a little bit more difficult. So we get them to cut Play-Doh, or they cut thick cardboard or something. And also, once again, threading beads. So that's something that we use quite often.
Okay. Actually, very, very simple little things for children to actually do.
Yes.
And it's amazing how this can actually help them in, you know, developing all these senses of theirs. Yeah. Alhamdulillah. Okay. We're just going to take a short break.
Okay.
When we return, you can tell us more about the cognitive skills, and then we hope to go on to our speech therapist and audiologist. We'll be back in a few moments. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to Family Health Matters. I'm your sister Zeenat, and we have the whole, not the whole, I don't know if it is the whole though, but it's a Linasia Clinic community-based rehabilitation services team with us. Melanise Miller and Nazreen Hassan, they are the OTs here with us in the studio today. And we also have our audiologist and speech therapist with us, Teresa Mullah, who will be coming on in a few moments. But before we get her, we were talking about the visual perception and the fine motor skills. Can you just tell us a little about the cognitive skills, please?
Okay. So cognitive skills are the ability to think, process information, reason, remember, and understand. And there are a whole bunch of cognitive skills that we look at. These include things like your memory, attention span, judgment, problem solving, decision making. There's a whole bunch. We treat cognitive problems based on the specific child. And I can give you some examples of how we do this. So, for example, with a child that struggles with memory, we'll just play memory games with them. Or a child that struggles to pay attention, we'll look at the underlying issues that's contributing to their short attention span, and then we will actually time them during activities, and then we'll see, can they focus a little bit longer in the next session, and then we give a lot of positive reinforcement if they can focus longer each time. We allow children to solve problems within games. We teach them to take responsibilities, or we allow them to take responsibilities, and then also to make decisions, and then take responsibility for those decisions that they are making. And also, like I said, the cognitive abilities of each child that we get is different, and we design the program according to that child. So the cognitive abilities that we treat depend on what the child is struggling with.
Well, it's actually amazing listening to your people, yeah, telling us about all this. I mean, you know, it's something that we really need to be aware of. But thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
Now, let's speak to our speech therapist and audiologist. Now, what are speech and language delays and disorders? And, you know, what is the difference between these two terms?
Okay, so often when patients get referred for speech therapy, it could be a combination of a speech disorder or a language delay. So a speech disorder would be the way that the sound actually comes out. So those could be your children that are stuttering, or it could be your children that have articulation and pronunciation errors. So articulation would be your children that are saying the rufo. So instead of saying robot, they say wobot. So those are pure speech difficulties. Mm-hmm. Now, language is a little bit different. Language focuses on meanings rather than your sounds. Language delay is when a child's language is developing but at a slower rate. So we also work with language delays. So that works. It works quite closely with the OT because they see the concentration, the cognitive abilities, that vestibular and proprioceptive. If all that's okay, then we don't usually have a lot of difficulties with the language delays. But if a child is struggling in those aspects, it can also affect their language. So I think it ties in quite nicely with the OTs. So speech and language disorders describe abnormal language development. So your delayed speech and language development is the most common problem that we see in our children. So your child may have a language delay if they're not meeting the appropriate milestones. So at 2 years old, for example, they're supposed to be saying two words together. So they're starting to have two phrases. So they'd say, mommy, go. But now if your two-year-old is only saying mama, then there's a slight concern whether the child is delayed in terms of language. There could be a combination of causes or factors, but I will discuss that a bit later. So language is broken up into two parts. It's your receptive language and expressive language. Receptive language is the ability to understand, so that would be following of instructions, while expressive language is actually the speaking, so the language that comes out. So with expressive language, looking at their sentences, sentence length, so it's there's a difference between them. So a child's receptive language has to be developed appropriately before their expressive language. So if they're having a receptive language delay, then we'd expect their expressive language also be delayed because they don't have that foundation. So it can be, you can have a combination of both. So I'll go into the courses a little bit later, but there's various courses. It could be a hearing impairment, it could be autism, it could be an intellectual disability or any psychosocial problem. So we'd also, like Melanie and Nazreen, we don't diagnose the learning disability. So we can't necessarily say the child has a learning disability. We'd need a proper diagnosis from your doctors or your psychologist or your educational psychologist before we know the appropriate plan for the child.
Okay. So now how can we as parents tell if their child's speech and their language development is on track?
Okay, so for that they would look at the child's speech and language milestones. So I don't have a lot of time, so I'm not going to go into all of it into detail, but everyone has access to the internet and they can just Google, try and keep track of your child's development in terms of speech. So at 2 years old, they're saying two words together. Their vocabulary is also increasing. They're understanding a little more instructions as they're getting older. So by 4 years old, they're putting 4 to 5 words together. So you want to continuously monitor that. Also in your Road to Health book, on page 13, if you have that, keep it. On page 13, there's a table in there. That table has different columns. So it looks at vision, it looks at the child's hearing ability and communication ability. So by monitoring that and seeing that table, you can see exactly where your child is, if they're on par, if maybe there's a bit of a delay with vision or with communication. Then from there you know exactly, okay, my child's maybe a few months behind or a year behind, now I really need to do something about it. So it's very important for parents to keep track of development. Mm-hmm. Don't leave it and think that your child is going to just suddenly speak or to do these things. If you are concerned at that moment, then take action at that point. Don't leave it for too long, because if you leave it for too long, it's going to manifest. And as they grow older, they're going to have more difficulties at school. They'd have bigger language delays. So the intervention will be it'll take a little longer. So as the clinics, we promote your early intervention. So that means getting the child in as early as possible. So you intervene as soon as you can so that the child's getting all the input from younger, so that they picking up on a lot of things. Because the child younger than 3 years old, their brain is still developing. So the more input we give, the more they learn. By 3 years old and a little bit older, their brain is still developing, but it's not, so we call it neuroplasticity. Those first 3 years of life is very, very important. Very, very important.
And I know, that's the reason why we do these programs, so that people, become aware of the fact that there's so much of help available out there, and the quicker you get help, the better it is for you and for your child, especially for the child.
I think for the child it's very important. Mm-hmm. Like, we actually go to the Civic Center in Lanesha Clinic, on by the top shops, I'm not sure what extension that is, but we actually go there as a team, and we give parents talks, and then we do a quick screener. So if you're not sure, you just want to make sure everything's okay, we are there on the last Monday of the month. So you pop in, 5-10 minutes, we quickly check if everything's okay, you can leave, no problems. If we need to give you a quick home program, we give you a quick home program. If we need to refer you maybe to somebody else, so you don't know who to go to next, you can always come to us and we can actually refer you out further.
Okay. I'd love to continue giving you, but maybe just very quickly, can you just give us in a minute or two, some of the causes of speech and language problems?
Yeah. Okay, so the first thing that we'd want to find out is the child's hearing. So the first thing is you do a hearing test. If your child is not speaking, it might be that they're not hearing the sound. So you do a hearing assessment first, just so you have an idea of how they're hearing. It could be an intellectual disability. Prematurity also causes developmental delays as well as language and learning delays. So extreme environment deprivation can cause speech delays. So if a child is neglected, abused, they might not necessarily want to speak about it. But it might not be the delay, it might be something psychological happening. So we work a lot as a team with when it comes to referring out. It could also be an auditory processing disorder. So the child has difficulty with processing the information. They can hear it, but they just can't process in their brain what's going on. Your neurological problems like your CP, muscular dystrophy, your traumatic brain injuries. Autism also affects communication. So autistic kids, they have a lot of difficulty with social interaction, communicating with people. It could be structural problems like your cleft palate, your apraxia of speech, or a selectivity of mutism. So those are the kids that choose not to speak. So that could be because of a psychological difficulty that's occurring that they just don't want to speak. Or it could just be a pure language difficulty. So they could have been understimulated when they were growing up. Maybe parents just put them in front of the TV. They didn't stimulate them with books, with actually speaking to them. So you can see a language delay with those kids also.
Okay, so just to end the program, okay, what is the, you know, just one good advice that you would like to give to parents?
Okay, so it's very important to listen and to look at your child. So if you notice anything, even if it's something small, go to your doctor. If you're not sure, the doctor will refer you to us. Speak a lot to your children. I've always been harping on about this, but constantly be speaking to your children. At 2 years old, if they're putting one word together, you try and put two words together for them. If they say maybe water, you'd expand on their sentence. You say, oh, you want some water to drink? Are you thirsty? Let mommy give you some water. See, the water's in the cup. So you're using the word water several times. The more you repeat, the more the children will learn. Also, the better you model behavior, the model the speech for the child will pick up. Oh, and get very excited. We really, really like positive reinforcement. So even if your child says a new word, you repeat that word, tell them you did such a good job, mommy's so happy.
Yeah, alhamdulillah. Thank you so much. I know we still wanted to talk about quite a few things, but maybe inshallah in our next program. Okay. But jazakallah khair, it was wonderful talking to all of you. Thank you so much, fair Melanie too. Melanie, sorry. And we hope to have you with us again inshallah in a month's time. So to all three of you, thank you so much. Jazakallah.
Jazakallah.
Walaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And that brings us to the end of our program today. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.